Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. Beautiful sunny morning this morning. Could be the last we see of the sun for some time.
Enjoy it while you can.
we'll talk a little more in depth about what's in store for the week. But first of all, this is Mountain Money. Larry Warren along with Doug Wells as usual. And glad you're with us this morning. Interesting show. We're going to focus on a couple of different aspects of tourism this morning. And we're going to start by talking to Gordon Cummins, a great friend of KPCW, Gordo, as he's known at Pledge Drive time here in KPCW. He's also the co-owner of All Resort Group and vice president of the firm. And as you'll recall, late last month, All Resort Group filed for bankruptcy protection. Chapter 11, a reorganization, not the Chapter 7, which is the liquidation. But they're trying to reorganize their business and get back to normal. And Gordo is on the line with us now, and we'll be talking about the bankruptcy, what led to it, what the path is out of it. Longtime Park City company, you see their vehicles all around town and the valley. So we'll be talking with Gordon Cummins about what's going on at All Resort Express.
Yeah, no, that'll be a great conversation. And then after Gordo, we have Michael Palmer. Michelle Palmer, Director of Sales and Business Development at Destination Services Corporation, and Terry Beckman with Deer Valley, in charge of key accounts management. Larry, one of the themes of today's show is tourism. Tourism is booming. So are corporate events, and both Terry and Michelle are responsible for bringing in those big corporate events. And then our last guest is going to be Jan Brussel. Jan is with Pedego Electric Bikes, so when people come here to town and they want to do something, obviously mountain biking is very popular, but some folks like to use an electric bike to get around. They're becoming quite popular.
Plus, at 7,000 feet, if you're coming in from sea level, the electric assist, no doubt.
Very valuable.
Is welcome. So we'll be back with Gordon Cummins from All Resort Express in just a minute. Weather is supposed to be 63 today, turning to scattered showers later, and there's a chance of rain-snow mix all week long. Getting colder as the week progresses, and Wednesday, Doug, there's a winter storm watch in effect for snow on Wednesday. So we're at the time of year where we have to worry about high runoff because of warm temperatures and then snow at the same time. Well, that's it. We'll be back in just a moment to talk with Gordon Cummins.
All Resort Group is a proud KPCW sponsor of Mountain Money.
All Resort Group provides vans, SUVs, sedans, and Express for Less taxi to move you from Salt Lake to Park City and back, or anywhere you want to go.
Reservations at allresort.com or 649-3999.
We move people.
Hello, I'm Justin Keyes. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support Mountain Money on KPCW. Our firm provides construction, real estate, and general business legal services to the Park City community. We are online at joneswaldo.com and can be reached at 435-200-0085.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We're on the line now with Gordon Cummins from All Resort Express. Coincidentally enough, we just heard your commercial, Gordon, for
your... You're putting me under a great deal of pressure.
For your services, that's fine. Thanks for joining us, because this isn't probably a real pleasant topic to talk about. All Resort filing for Chapter 11 voluntary bankruptcy last month. And I guess the big question, and we had you on when this first broke, but we want to go a little more in depth now, but the overarching question is just why it seemed like such a good year for business, one of the record years for tourism in Park City. What was going on behind the scenes at All Resort?
Well, good morning, Larry and Doug. Thanks for having us on, and thanks for inviting me on. First and foremost, it has nothing to do with this last winter season, the first quarter. I would venture to say that most companies don't do a Chapter 11 after 3 months of business when they have an extremely profitable year like we did the first quarter.
Right.
This has been chapter 11. Let's see, how do I say this? It didn't happen overnight. Richard and I, my partner, Richard Bizarro and I, have done several acquisitions over the years. And due to the 08, 09 economy, we had to do cash. We had to do everything we did. Acquisitions were all done through internal cash flow purchases. We had several very large lawsuits, which sucked the wind out of our sails, so to speak, with a lot of profit. And we prevailed in all the lawsuits, by the way. We won, but that doesn't remove the cost of litigation. And then we made one or two in the haste to grow our company and grow our revenue. We took on one or two good accounts, but they were very they really drew on our cash, which prevented us from paying our vendors. In other words, we had a cash flow, some rather large companies, and we didn't get paid in a timely manner, and it pertained to a lot of labor costs. And when you put all those things together, it just all kind of hit at the same time. Lawsuits, legal fees, this labor issue for the last 18 months, and it just kind of hit us at once, and we just could not get in front of the ball, and we were always coming from behind the ball. And then by the thing that kind of broke the back, straw that broke the camel's back, was one more litigation on an insurance deal where we paid our insurance bill, but they hit us with another $600,000 bill, and we just don't have the funds. So when you add that up with our vendors, we could not pay our bills and stay ahead of the game, and it was really wearing us down. So, and we happened to be one of those companies that was a perfect candidate for a reorganization. And we hired a very expensive attorney who brought in a very strong, a brilliant, what I call forensic accountant, and they've been working around the clock, filling out piles and piles of paperwork for the trustee and the judge to present. And it's very, it's line items. You have to fill it out. If you don't fill it out properly or it doesn't match up according to the way their matrices work, we'd be out of business. So we had our first court appearance this past Tuesday. It lasted 3 hours, which is unusually long. And the court, the trustee, well, first of all, our attorney and accountants did a fabulous job. Larry Killingsworth, our president, and the team at the company did a fantastic job working around the clock to prepare the documentation that had to be presented. And it's really interesting. This is not something I was ever trained for. This is all after-the-fact information I'm conveying to you.
Sure.
We basically are prepared. We had to prepare 22 days of cash flow, 22 days of liabilities, and the fact that we could make it and make those bills, including payroll. And once that was presented and signed off, we could make payroll. The judge would sign off on that, and we could pay these bills. The judge would sign off on that. So round one is done with us. And Larry actually used the phrase, we prevailed in the first quarter. Then we have another court appearance in a week and a half, which is a six-month plan. And, again, they're working around the clock to prepare cash flow, daily cash flow reports. We have to show to the courts that we are a viable company and that we're not that we have the ability to pay our vendors back, which we desperately want to do, and that we can provide the services at the same highest level that we have been doing.
Yeah, Gordo, let me interrupt and just why don't you give us a quick overview of the scope of All Resort Express. People see the white shuttle vans, but that's just the start of the company now. That's how you started long ago, but you are into a lot of things and not all just in the Park City market now.
No, you're correct, Larry. I started All Resort Express in November 1990, and then I brought on a partner, Richard Bizarro, in 2004, and I wanted to grow the business, and I didn't have the financial resources or the brain horsepower, and Richard and I made a good partnership, and we acquired, the first company we acquired was Lewis Brothers, which then became All Resort Coach, or more fondly known as Lewis Stages. And we helped Steve out and turn that thing around. And it's, transportation's a costly business. Buses are not cheap. Maintaining them, that's not cheap. Fuel got very expensive, if you recall, $4.50 a gallon. And so it's been a very long, tedious process. Then we acquired Park City Transportation with Donnie Novell. That's a company I used to work for back in the 80s that Dave Novell started back in the early 1970s. And they have a tremendous legacy. We acquired Premier Transportation. Then we started a brand called Express for Less. And then at the same time, 5 years ago, we expanded to Las Vegas, our all-resort coach. And so now we have a bus division in Las Vegas, and that's taken a little longer than we expected. It's an extremely tough market. It's heavily regulated through the Nevada Transit Authority, Tourism Authority. And so you add all these things up, it's been a massive undertaking. And we finally, for the first time, something we've talked about for 3 years, we actually, and this was all directed by the bankruptcy attorney, so we need to incorporate everybody under one heading, which is called the All Resort Group. So all the smaller corporations have been dissolved, and they're all DBAs of All Resort Group. Yeah, and that is really going to save a lot of time accounting-wise going forward. It's been a nightmare.
Yeah, no, it gets...
I feel sorry for the accounting department.
It's complicated to run with these different divisions. It's even more complex when you start looking at a bankruptcy and limited dollars and which dollars get to go to one corporation. So it seems like it makes a lot of sense to put that under one umbrella.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
You just chatted with us about your growth and the history. You know, in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been increased competition as well, both traditional competition as well as firms like Uber and Lyft. Uber, I would say, does not have a good name in town because of their chopper attack two Sundances ago. But what role do you think the increased competition played in making this a tougher industry for you guys?
Well, is that Doug speaking?
Yes. It is, yes.
Yeah, great question, Doug. First of all, I'd like to back that up a bit. It has been Uber and Lyft. It's it goes back about 12 or 14 years ago, pre-Olympics, when the city, in their infinite wisdom, opened a can of worms by allowing anybody for $75 or $80 to go into transportation. And they basically have a Suburban, and they work out of their house in Park Meadows or in at Kimball Junction, wherever they live, and they'll have two, maybe three cars. One time, I believe they had 154 companies licensed to do transportation. Yes, we are the biggest. However, if we went away in the big picture, none of those companies could serve or provide the level of service that we need for these large corporate groups. I think I heard you say Michelle Palmer is going to be on. One of our very close friends of mine, she was part of the DVIP group that we used to own. And they bring in a lot of corporate groups, and you need 30, 40 vans. You need buses. You need minibuses. And it takes a lot of moving parts. And unlike most places in the country, Vegas, Colorado, just next door, there aren't that many companies. And the city, in my opinion, has done a disservice to allow that to happen. Now you compound that with Uber and Lyft. That doesn't affect us at the level as you might think, because truly we're not a taxi-type company. We try to pre-book our folks before they get to town. We provide high-quality equipment to pick them up at the airport. We pay a lot of money to have our airport counters. We provide meet-and-greet service. So it's kind of like apples and oranges. But on the other side, people don't really understand the type of cars they're getting in with an Uber in an Uber scenario, and they don't understand a lot of things. And I don't want to get down that road at this point in time, but it has had a very small impact. And it's generally with the people that did not have a reservation when they come off the airplane in Salt Lake City. And it's probably impacted maybe 30-40% of our non-reservations, which makes up a small percentage of our total volume through a course of a year.
Well, I'm glad to hear that did not play a role. Now let's go back to the decision to file bankruptcy. You know, usually companies are very reluctant to do that. It's kind of the last resort. And oftentimes that's a mistake, right? The sooner you identify the issue and you say, you know what, we need the protection of bankruptcy in order to give us the time and the negotiating power with the various vendors and debt holders, Usually, once you identify that, the sooner you go forward, the better. And the sooner you realize, as you were talking earlier, that you need a really strong attorney that's has expertise in this area, that usually serves you well. So talk to us about what was the decision like to go this route, and how long did you wait, or was it clear to you right from the beginning, hey, we have to do this?
Well, another great question, Doug. Having 2020 hindsight, I wish we would have done this in January. But however, during Sundance, during that critical time, we could not have been distracted. We could not have provided the level of service that's required to fulfill all these documentation and the amount of hundreds and hundreds of hours to prepare these forms. But we could have been out of this thing and are working towards it in with a much better cash on hand situation and reached our end game sooner. And, you know, I'll tell you, in all fairness, our attorney says we are a perfect candidate for this. It's not something I wanted to do, and like a good businessman, Richard and I tried to hang on as long as we could because we really didn't want to do it because our vendors and our partners have really been the ones that have helped us get to where we are today. Having said that, they're suggesting that we could be out of this Chapter 11 as early as November, December, maybe January. And with and the myth that a lot of people think, we don't make the decision on what percentage to pay back to people. It appears we're going to be paying everybody back 100% that we owe them, but it may take 18 months. It may take 24 months. The court will dictate to us what the plan is because they want to see us first and foremost pay our bills on time monthly going forward, make our payroll monthly on time going forward, and then whatever profits are left over, it goes into a bucket. And then based on that bucket and as it builds, they will then at that time, from what I understand, again, secondhand information, please, they will dictate how we pay our vendors and get everybody paid back and paid off.
Yeah, that's one of the big purposes of bankruptcy is to have an unbiased person decide how do these limited dollars get spread out. You know, the whole reorganization bankruptcy, I think is a great tool. And ultimately, I think everybody benefits by having that alternative available. I'm curious, you know, typically when a company goes through a reorganization bankruptcy, and I agree in many ways, you guys are the poster child of a company that benefits from being able to do this. One of the things that makes your situation a little more challenging, though, is your assets, these buses, these vehicles, are on wheels. And they can be moved from company to company very quickly, which makes the people that own the leases on these vehicles saying, hey, if we can't get paid back right away, you know, we can deploy these in different places and get them across the country in 2 or 3 days. Has that played a role, the fact that your largest assets are easily movable from point A to point B?
Well, you know, it's another good, great question. First of all, this question wasn't asked, but I'll volunteer. Our lien holders are current. They're not in default, meaning every bus has a lien on it with the title. And so we're good there. We have our primary lender for our other side of the fence, our smaller cars, SUVs, which are lease vehicles, Hinckley's. We owe them a little money, and they're going to be taken care of, I hope, within the next 60 days. But that has not come up at all because these guys that lend the money are not local banks. They're Minnesota, they're New York, they're Texas, they're California. These buses go all over the country, as you suggested, and that's not at issue today. They know the value of them. We have to put money down on them, and they know the depreciated life of them, and so they have value. And we are looking at some different avenues, so perhaps maybe we should look at bringing in a partner on the bus side. We're looking also at all sorts of things on top of the BK right now, but that's not going to be part of the actual restructure as of this point.
You know, Gordon, you said you and Richard thought long and hard before you took this step and maybe hurt yourself by not taking it sooner, but is one consideration the fact that going forward now, any future lender or anyone doing business with you knows that this is a company that didn't go bankrupt, but went into bankruptcy protection once. Is there any I guess, stigma that's going to make it harder to do business going forward?
You know, that's a good question. I'm sure there's a customer or two out there that are sophisticated financial type people that may think that way. Most of our customers in Park City are A-OK today. But, you know, I cannot predict the future. I don't know why. Delta Airlines hasn't appeared to have any problems when they've had their Chapter 11s. Some of the major, there's a lot of major companies that have done reorganizations, and they're still bigger than ever. And so if the guys are sophisticated enough, they should understand that this is something to make us stronger, not weaker. And I'm a proverbial an optimist, and my partner is not. And we battle with this, but I'm of the opinion, I'm happy this has happened at this point. We're going to learn how to do a budget. We're going to learn how to do cash management, which will make us even more successful financially, which isn't that the ultimate goal? That's how I look at this opportunity right now.
It is, and that brings up a really good point. You know, Park City has a lot of small businesses. You guys are not small. You're medium on the smaller side is a large, but definitely not a small company. But what, Gordo, what advice do you have for the business owners listening, both if they're facing challenges, but also just, you know, the importance of understanding accounting? It seems boring. It seems like something you can put off. But given your experience, what advice do you have for business owners?
I'm chuckling because, you know, it's such a great question. The single most important part of a business is having a rock-solid accountant that provides a P&L statement, a balance sheet, and then use the business owner understanding what it means. And I'm going to tell you, I, for one, am not a when I didn't have Richard as a partner, I did. I watched my cash every day. I couldn't read a balance sheet per se. That's not my training, but I knew I needed to have more money to be on the black side than the red side. And that was much easier to do when you're doing, you know, $3-4 million a year. But when you get up into $25-35 million a year, it's not that easy, especially with a multiple of companies. And you have to rely on other people. And we had some people that are no longer with us that were there. And information they were providing was truly wrong.
Yeah. Now, Gordon, you said earlier, I think, that when you emerge from bankruptcy protection, everybody will be made whole. Does it look like you can do that? Every cent can be paid back?
I think what I suggested, Larry, was that's what we've been led to believe by our attorney because of the type of company we're on our cash flow. I think that will be driven by the court trustees, the appointed court trustee, and the judge. They're the ones that ultimately make that decision. We would like to pay everybody 100%, of course. But that's all based on all these financial statements, the cash flow statements, the balance sheets, et cetera, et cetera. And again, that's driven by somebody else, not us.
All right. Well, Gordon, we thank you for joining us this morning. You said earlier that you're an optimist, and I think being an optimistic person helps when you're going through stuff like this. So thank you for joining us on Mound Money.
Yeah, and thanks for giving us the time. And we will be there for our customers in the future. We're there today, tomorrow, and hopefully next year. So that's what our plan is.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Gordon Cummins, co-owner of All Resort Group, the vice president of the firm, a longtime firm, been around since the early 90s, and before that, some of its successor companies have been around since the 70s. Well, we are headed to a high today of about 63 degrees. It's going to be mostly sunny, but chance that it's going to be clouding up later in the day, maybe get a sprinkle. And then tomorrow and through the rest of the week, there's a chance of rain and snow with a winter storm warning out for Wednesday, believe it or not. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about a different form of travel and tourism. We're going to talk about convention business in Park City, corporate travel into town with Michelle Palmer and Terry Beckman. So stay with us on Mountain Money.
G'day, this is Ian from Campos Coffee, a proud KPCW sponsor. Our first winter in Park City was awesome. Thanks for accepting us into our community. We're open for breakfast and lunch every day during the mud season. We're just above the ice rink at Park City Mountain. camposcoffee.com.
This is Allison Kulo with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau provides your business with benefits, from lodging projections, educational videos, group sales leads, and a listing on the top travel site for Park City, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining can be found at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In the studio now, we have Terry Beckman from Deer Valley, where he's the Sales Systems and Key Accounts Manager, and Michelle Palmer, Director of Sales and Business Development for Destination Services Corporation. And both of you probably work together an awful lot, and that's one reason you're here together. How you know, we mostly, as a citizen of Park City, look at tourism as individual families coming to town, maybe ski clubs coming to town. But you're working another side of the business. And how significant is it?
It's very significant. We work in the corporate sector, and group business is what Terry and I have made our careers wholeheartedly here in Park City. This will be 25 years for me in the local area, and I met Terry in the very early 2000s when he joined the Deer Valley team, and together we stomp all over the country looking for new business opportunities to bring corporate group to Park City year-round.
So what size groups can these be, Terry?
Well, I think we just prove with Luxottica that we can handle up to 700 guests, but it really depends on the season and when the group wants to come to the area. I'd say winter time is a little tougher with the high amount of leisure travel that we have coming to town, but yeah, anywhere from the smallest groups or advisory board meetings, 10 to 20 people, and I'd say based on the size of the facilities, 200.
I think 200 is probably the sweet spot for Park City. And over the years, our Chamber Bureau has marketed our destination as a small meetings destination, and 200 would be considered a large group. But over the years, there have been larger hotels with meeting and conference facilities, and more collaboration in the community is allowing these larger groups. And just like we've seen for years in city or more urban destinations like Salt Lake City, considering a citywide, which would be based out of the Salt Palace Convention Center, and maybe half a dozen or more hotels would benefit from that group. Terry got really clever with this group that was in town 2 weeks ago, and he put together a citywide here in Park City and assisted in erecting a 15,000 square foot pavilion that was built over parking lot one. And he brokered five lodging properties in over 100 standalone condominiums and private homes that we then supported Terry and his team on moving those 700 guests all around town and helping to manage their itinerary while they were here for 4 days.
Yeah, so just talk a little bit about this group, and did this represent a kind of breakthrough in looking at the Park City market for a bigger convention than your typical 200 or less?
I would say absolutely, yeah. And just how unique everything was, there's really only certain times of the year where we could pull this off, not only based on the availability of the hotels and the different properties throughout town, but also of our physical space in that Snow Park area. The parking lot number one that Michelle referenced is just north of Snow Park Lodge. So it encompassed that whole parking lot. And they really took over all of Snow Park 2 weeks after close when, you know, we're really
well,
used
the town's
to
dead. I mean, it's, yeah, right. It's mud season, and you were able to bring in 600 people, which is an amazing shot in the arm that time of year. And I guess my question would be, for leisure, what did they have to do? They couldn't ski, they couldn't mountain bike. What did you find for them to do?
Well, what was interesting with this group is Terry and I do a lot of incentive business, so reward travel in the corporate sector. And this was a true meeting. This was an annual sales convention. So that pavilion was erected to house general session and breakout sessions with the support of Snow Park Lodge. And there was a magnificent team building event that we programmed for them. And we're very fortunate in this community to have a facility like the Park City Film Studios, which is where we hosted a team building event for over 600. And we worked in collaboration with the National Ability Center, as well as a professional team building company out of the Northeast. And we facilitated in two of their three bays a 2.5 hour interactive iPad-led team building exercise that ultimately put forth a $25,000 donation to the National Ability Center. And that was the fun that they had during daytime hours. Otherwise, they were meeting and networking and doing business sessions. And then historic Main Street in Park City certainly offers enough to entertain as well. And we did program a Park City night here in town.
I'm glad you brought up the film studios, because I've had some friends ask, you know, how is that integrated at all with our tourism and our corporate business? Was that kind of a one-off, or is the film studio something that's on your agenda that you offer to corporate clients on a regular basis?
It's not something that is offered on a regular basis. Their prime mission is film production, and they're going after a resident production, and they will not book long term. So their window of opportunity to secure that facility is less than 90 days. Terry queued me up back in November of 16 for this Luxottica opportunity, which is rare that a group this large would book in such a short-term window, just a six-month lead time. And they didn't make decisions on awarding us the business until early January. So by the time they were out on the ground investigating facilities and services that they would incorporate into their program, it was February. And so then we were within that window. And we had initially looked at the Basin Recreation Center as a host site, but with their construction schedule, it just wasn't panning out to be the best fit. And it was my leader at Destination Services Corporation who jumped in the car and drove to the film studio and stood at the front door and rang the number. And Marshall and Doug opened the door, and there was no resident film in house. And so it was a perfect storm, and it just worked out.
Yeah, there was a lack of precedent on so many levels with this event that we hope now that we've really set the stage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone in town now knows that if you do get that lead that comes in, that's 700-800 people, only because your hotel has 200 rooms, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can't partner with everyone in the community to pull it together.
You know, so we've seen the state of Utah and Park City just do a great job of attracting tourism and corporate events like this. On the tourist side, you know, we're all part of the target audience, so we occasionally see ads for Utah. You know, maybe you're on vacation in Southern California and you'll see an ad for Utah. On the corporate side, most of us are not the target audience. How do you get the word out about Park City? What does that look like? Is it magazine advertising? Is it going to events? What are the big things that move the needle there?
Terry, do you want to take that? You're on the road a lot.
Yeah, sure. A lot of our efforts through Deer Valley are just kind of grassroots, getting in market, setting up appointments with qualified people that plan these types of events. I mean, there's certainly efforts through the Chamber Bureau, the M&C committees, and people, you know, putting out that message as a community as a whole. But for Deer Valley, you know, we have a small footprint in the trade show arena, but in terms of this piece of business, it was a third-party event planning company who I had been in touch with for about 10 years, but we'd never booked a piece of business, and it was just a simple, old-fashioned phone call that happened to be at the right time, and the stars just kind of aligned.
So it's more one-on-one, getting the word out, as opposed to mass communications. How about for DSC? You guys are both here in Utah and also Colorado. And do I remember, are you also in the Lake Tahoe area?
We are. So Destination Services Corporation is a brand of Mountain West service providers. The home base is in Vail. We also have operations in Colorado Springs, Denver, Lake Tahoe, and I'm on the Park City team, so representing Park City Salt Lake, and then we also have Jackson Hole satellite office. So many of you in the community knew this Utah team as Destination VIP or DVIP. We were founded by a husband and wife team here in the early late 90s, early 2000s. So many of us on the Utah team have been here a long time. Destination Services Corporation came in and acquired, brought in the Utah and Jackson Hole team into that mix 2 years ago. And then just in February of this past winter season, our team, DSC, was acquired by Allied PRA, which is the nation's largest event planning company based in San Diego. So our six offices are now part of another 20 offices across the globe. And we do have parent company brand presence, but to speak specifically to your question with DSC, I'll look at my travel schedule as a sales professional and a business development leader for DSC as a brand. I'll be next month at the Montage in Palmetto Bluff at a convention called FICP Education Forum. That stands for Financial and Insurance Conference Planners. It's a boutique organization that I have been a member of for many years. There are many hotel partners in the community, as well as Deer Valley, who are also members of that. That event was held at Montage Deer Valley in 2013. That's a real intimate group of professional meeting planners that are largely employed in-house by financial and insurance institutions. And that's a leading market segment for Deer Valley and for DSC. The insurance in the financial institutions, they reward their top producers. They bring brokers out for entertainment, and Park City is a real likely destination for them. There are also big trade shows like IMEX that's held in Las Vegas every fall that all the world's corporate travel buyers will attend. We will be
so
there as well.
Your space has a little more leverage you can get. It's not one-on-one, but it's more going to these group events. I'm curious, with your national focus and your firm, and now having been acquired, representing so many different towns, you know, I look at what our city leaders are doing here in Park City, and I think we're doing a ton of things correctly. I mean, it's just really, it's really fun to see. I've only lived here 11 years, but just in the 11 years, just there's really very few slow weeks in Park City anymore. But from your standpoint, are there things that should be on our radar screen that maybe are not, that you'd say to the business leaders, hey, these are some things you should be thinking about over the next 3 or 4 years that may not be on their radar screen today?
I definitely think so. And I'll use this opportunity we had 2 weeks ago, where there are so many in our community that don't know that this corporate group sector exists. We do think of it as that leisure and vacationing visitors that come, or during spring, summer, fall, we've got the festivals and things that are driving more community awareness to the visitation. But what's happening is these hotels up on the mountainsides are full year-round with convention space. And it was Lynn and Linda at the City Hall that helped us get the word out to the Main Street merchants and introduced us to Michael with the Historic Park City Business Alliance, so that we could go to the Main Street businesses and say, there's going to be 700 people on Main Street on Monday, May the 1st. Will you be open? Would you consider opening? If not, will you be open after 7 p.m.? This group is being transported to Main Street at 6:30. And we worked with three restaurants on Main Street and a nightclub. And we did a diner round and had live musical entertainment all programmed exclusively for this group. But then they also meandered the streets. And there was a lot of great feedback. And I think that from the feedback we heard that Lynn Ware Peak shared with us, is people were astounded that 700 guests were going to be in Park City that first week of May. Like, what sector is that coming from? And I think in having knowledge and speaking over the last few months with some folks with City Hall and the SEAC committee, is this a sector of the community that's being overlooked right now? Are they also having impacts in transportation and visitation? Are they also benefiting the ability to be busy 52 weeks a year in keeping our employees employed and our landlords with renters and all that such. I think that there's a lot that goes into this, and I think we should all be studying what are the impacts of tourism to Park City, because let's not just always point the fingers at the big 900-pound gorilla in the room that in the winter season might be the mountain resorts, or in the summer season it might be the Silly Market or something like that. There are so many other reasons that are driving visitation to Park City, and corporate is a big sector of it. Bill Malone, I'm sure, could give you statistics on what that number is. And for Terry and his entire team at Deer Valley Resort, it's their livelihood 12 months of the year.
That's very true, Michelle. And as over the years, as the number of facilities and the bed base has grown, you know, how do you fill that during the times when there is very light leisure demand? And that's where this corporate market really comes into play. And you know, everybody wants to keep their employees satisfied. They want to use their space. They want to show people that we really are a 12-month destination.
And I would think that the side benefit for Park City is all these people who are coming in for a corporate event are looking around saying, I want to bring my family back here.
Absolutely.
On a vacation.
Yeah, you hear that through and through on all these events. Can you really measure that? How did you find your way back to town? But yeah, that is certainly the hope. But yeah, you hear that over and over. People say, I'm going to come back with my family.
And not only visitation, I think the real estate market as well is often fueled by those who then become exposed to Park City because of a corporate event that they've attended.
Okay, a lot of benefits to corporate travel, and there is an active business in bringing it to Park City. Thanks for sharing with us how that happens. Terry Beckman from Deer Valley, Michelle Palmer from Destination Services Corporation, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back to talk about electric bikes with Pedego after this.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, introducing Apex Residences, 63 ski-through community residences located at Park City's expanded Canyon Village, with clubhouse amenities, heated outdoor pool, and in-house concierge. Information at apexparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Jan Brussel. He is with Pedego Electric Bikes, which is not just a brand, it's also a place that people can go to rent bikes, is that correct?
That's correct, yes. We have both sales and rentals.
Okay, and Pedego is the brand of the bikes, though.
Right, Pedego is the brand of bikes that we carry. They're kind of a mid-range bike. They're not real expensive, but they're not the cheap ones. They have great components, so that's the one we chose.
Okay, and where is your location?
We're in the Park City Plaza off Bonanza Drive, right beside Sammy's Bistro.
Okay. And then in the promo literature that I have, you mentioned you're right near the rail trail.
Right. We're located, it's really nice because we're close to the head of the rail trail, which is authorized for electric bikes. We're also by Poison Creek Trail and then just down the road to the McGee Creek Trail. So we're a lot of rideable trails are really close to where we're located.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to try to diplomatically get there. The difference between trails that are authorized for electric bikes and not. Has that discussion been held citywide, and is there a fair amount of clarity now, or is that still evolving?
Well, it's like everything else, much like when snowboards first came in, it's evolving, but the rules are pretty clear now. Electric bikes are authorized on hard surface trails, so basically paved trails at 8 feet wide is what the ordinance says. And that's most of the paved trails, both in the city and in the county. And the two entities are working together. The county is still working a little bit on their ordinance. They want to include some of the wide gravel trails, which are basically just gravel roads. But we don't see much of a problem, at least from our end of it. People who use the bikes tend to stick to the paved surfaces anyhow.
Right. And the people that are using the bike, are they mostly tourists that are here and your average rental is maybe a couple hours, or is it a different segment?
It's a little bit different. Our rentals are a lot of tourists, but there are also a lot of the residents, the part-time residents that are here for the summer. They like to come in, and we have frequent renters that come in multiple times a year. We sell most of our bicycles to local people who use them for alternate transportation, which is becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, no, I almost bought one a year ago right now. And the reason I didn't was the trails thing. I wasn't sure what the regulation was on the trails and whether I was allowed to use it or... So I'm glad that's all come together. Is that something that's fairly recent that they just got clarity on those rules, or has that been in place for a while?
The city ordinance has been in place for about 3 years. I met with Heinrich Dieter, who's in charge of all the trails for the city, when we first opened about 4 years ago, and we started working together on ordinances that would allow reasonable use of the electric bikes, but also not tread on the toes of the mountain bikers and the single trackers who were a little bit upset. They thought that they would have electric scooters all over the mountains, which clearly hasn't happened.
Yeah. So I should probably back up. I mean, you mentioned the resolution on the trails early, so I got ahead of myself when we started talking about that. But let's talk about what these electric bikes are. When I was a kid, I had a moped, which is a gas engine, but technically you could still pedal it. And so I think when I was 14 years old, I was allowed to ride one of those. What the electric bikes, the pedagos, is it kind of an electric version of that where you can still pedal them yourself, or is it all electric all the time?
No, it's not all electric. If you were on an electric bike and you tried to use it as strictly an electric bike, you'd be very disappointed. The battery would die quickly. The pedago bike and most electric bikes, at least in this class, start with a really good riding bike. Ours are 7-speed bikes. Some of them have more gears. We have an actual off-road mountain bike that has 20 speeds. But the average bike has 7 speeds. You pedal it, and you use the electric to assist. So what they're really great for is we have two types of customers that typically come in. One is the tourist that comes in from sea level or a low elevation. They'd love to ride mountain bikes, but they find when they hit hills, they end up pushing their mountain bike. And so they use the electric assist to help them get up hills. They can ride comfortably from Kimball Junction all the way up to Main Street if they want. And then the other people are people who used to be bike riders, but for age or injuries can no longer pedal the way they like. So they use the electric bike. They can still get out. They can ride. We delivered a bike yesterday to a gentleman who's developing Parkinson's disease, simply can't ride a regular bike anymore, but loves it. So now he and his wife can go back and start riding together again like they used to. So
the function is as you pedal, you're recharging the battery, or when you're coasting downhill, you're recharging the battery, or is it just a finite amount of battery storage that you carry on the bike?
It's finite. They don't regenerate. The mechanics of that, it would take so much energy to regenerate the battery that it would almost be not worth it. Also, it impedes the ability of the bike to glide. The batteries, depending on which one you get, can run from anywhere to 30 to 50 miles. So it's a pretty good range with normal pedaling. All of our bikes are just, you plug it in at the end of the day, and in about 3 hours, it'll fully recharge the battery.
And then how long do the, you know, one of the controversies with electric cars is how long do the batteries last? Not per charge, but what's the lifetime of the battery?
Sure. The batteries we use in our bikes, they're a lithium-ion battery, and they're rated for about 1,000 cycles. So depending on how many days of year you ride your bike, it'll recharge and hold a good charge for about 1,000 cycles.
And does the company offer a recycling policy when the battery dies out? Is there a environmentally friendly way to then handle that used battery?
Yes, absolutely. If somebody comes in and they have a battery that's dead, we'll take it in and we'll recycle it for them.
So the bikes, talk about rental prices, demos. Do you allow demos and retail sales? What's the range on purchasing one?
We definitely have different rental prices depending upon which model, whether it's the simple cruiser or the more complicated interceptor. They'll start at about $25 an hour, and the longer you rent it, the cheaper it is per hour. And we have 2-hour, 4-hour, all day. We've done weekly rentals. We've even done some monthly rentals for people who are just here for a month and want a bike. And for the sales portion of it, we definitely do demos. If you want to just come and try out a bike and ride it around for a few minutes and see what it's like, that's, of course, free. And then if you rent a bike and you want to try it for a little longer and then purchase, will credit you that rental fee back towards the purchase of your bike.
And how expensive are these bikes? What's kind of the range, low end to high end?
The low end bike that we would carry would be around $2,500, and they can go up to about $3,500.
Very fine. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Give us an idea of where you're located. Are you online? How do we get in touch with you?
We are online at pedagoparkcity.com. If you Google us, electric bikes in Park City will come up. We're on Bonanza Drive in the Park City Plaza right next to Sammy's Bistro.
Okay, thanks for joining us, Jan Brussel of Pedego Electric Bikes, and we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. You know, Doug, we had kind of a tourism theme going today, talking with All Resort Group, talking with Pedego Bike, and corporate travel into Park City. And there's a new U of U analysis of tourism in Utah, and I think people would be astounded by how big the tourism business is. The latest numbers are for 2015, and they show that tourists spent a record $8.2 billion in that 1 year, and that generated $1.15 billion in local tax revenue. And the neat thing about it is it's all money that started outside of the state of Utah and came in and got dropped here.
It's a huge number. I mean, what's the population of our state? 3 million?
3 million something.
That's $3,000 per man, woman, and child of residents in the United States, in Utah, that is being spent by outsiders. That's a big number.
And that's, you know, it's the ripple effect when you multiply that through the economy. It's either one or two. I mean, it's a huge business in the state of Utah. There's a lot of grumbling now about how many tourists there are, both in Park City and especially in the national parks. You can really sense the difference in what all these ad campaigns have done over time.
Yeah, it's a good news, bad news. But financially, it's fantastic news for the state.
Indeed. So created 142,000 jobs in the state as well, and 12% growth from 2011 to 2015, and I presume that growth curve is only going to continue as long as
the economy holds. Does well.
Yeah. It's travel one of the more recession sensitive businesses there is, but as long as things are good, then things are good. Well, I want to thank our guests this morning, Gordon Cummins from All Resort Group, Michelle Palmer from Destination Services Corporation, and Terry Backman from Deer Valley, along with Jan Brussel from Pedego Bikes.
And as always, I want to thank the great sponsors for this show. They include Mountain West Bank, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Express, Park City Mountain, and Apex Residences, and Viridian Park City, Columbus Pacific Properties.
And all great sponsors of Mountain Money. And our forecast is for a high of 63 today, turning cloudier later, and a chance of scattered showers. Rain-snow mix tonight and tomorrow. And then Wednesday, snow showers likely, and a winter storm watch in effect, which, you know, last week when we, Doug, bless the Weather Service, but it's a hard job to predict the future when it comes to weather. And last week I read that forecast, and it was rain every day of the week, and it was one of the most beautiful weeks.
I was thinking about that.
It was mostly sunshine, so terrific.
Well, particularly this time of the year, it's really hard to figure out what's going to happen.
Yeah. So have you tried an electric bike?
You know, it's funny. I was going to ask you that question as well. I have, and it's a hoot. And if people haven't done it, even though we live here, this is our hometown, it's a lot of fun. Give it a try.
Okay. Got to swing by and give that a shot. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us on